speaker is Jonathan Sanderman. The title of the talk is The Role of Dissolved Organic Carbon in the Soil Carbon Cycle.
Great, thanks. Well, I guess I'm continuing on this biogeochemistry theme and following up on Wendy's talk about the effects of increased rainfall. Actually, I'll be looking at directly what types of carbon actually get dissolved in water and moves through the soils. And it's kind of, I guess that's the motivation for my larger kind of thesis, and just a smaller part that I'll be talking about today is really just most people in the terrestrial carbon world have tended to ignore the aqueous phase of carbon because the flux of CO2 out of the soil is so much greater than the amount being dissolved and moving in the water, but it actually is really important in various mechanisms, and I'd like to try to convince you today at least that it's actually a really important mechanism in bringing carbon from the surface of the soil down deep into the mineral soil where it could actually be stored for long periods of time. So just kind of the broad general global carbon cycle, big overview, Wendy already kind of introduced us that the soils actually store more than double the amount of carbon in either the vegetation or the atmospheric pool, and that there's this huge amount of exchange between the soils and atmosphere, an order of 60 pentagrams per year is being respired out of the soils into the atmosphere. And that about balances the net photosynthesis, but because of all this extra CO2 we've been adding to the atmosphere, is actually there is this net flux into the terrestrial system of about 1.4 pentagrams per year. Now, this slide I took off of the web actually doesn't even mention dissolved organic carbon sinfully. And so I'll add kind of the rough estimate of the global contribution of DOC movement off the land. And we see it's actually only one one-hundredth of this soil respiratory flux, but it actually is a significant fraction of this net inferred carbon sink on the land, and the people inferring this carbon sink actually aren't thinking about what might be leaving in the water. So it actually, and some pretty smart people have actually been postulating, especially in terms of European carbon balance, that this might be one of the major mechanisms leading to this large inferred net sink in the land that we actually can't find necessarily by digging in the soil. So that's kind of the overall broad motivation for studying DOC, and more specifically, I'm actually, just in this talk, I'm going to talk a little bit more about mechanisms by which carbon actually moves into the soil and might stay in the soil. So we know the soils are not this well-mixed, homogeneous reservoir of carbon, kind of the way the atmosphere is. There is these typical vertical profiles of carbon with depth. So this is typical forest soil. It's actually redwood forest soil where we have about 12 kilograms of carbon per meter squared. There's 2.5 in the litter layer, about 5.5 kilograms in the top 40 centimeters of mineral soil. But below 40 centimeters, really below the main rooting zone, there's still a large amount of carbon. In fact, some global estimates of the amount of carbon below 50 centimeters, even below a meter, say it's actually on par with what's stored in the top 50 centimeters of the soil. So there's a lot of carbon sitting down here, and it's potentially sitting down there for long periods of time, so it has lots of important implications in terms of sequestering carbon out of the atmosphere. So just kind of going through the different ways that we could get soil way down into this deep mineral soil, we really have direct root inputs is a real obvious way of pumping carbon directly into the soil. And then other ways, we have this large soil pool carbon stock at the surface from litter fall, and we could kind of migrate that down through the soil column over time by soil mixing, primarily in temperate areas because of various soil organisms, pocket gophers, earthworms, lots of various soil fauna are slowly mixing the soil, bringing litter down into the soil, etc. And then another mechanism which I want to focus on today is this leaching of dissolved organic compounds, and then their subsequent retention by absorption to mineral surfaces within the soil. And so if you haven't really thought about what DOC is, every time you make a pot of tea or coffee, you're essentially brewing dissolved organic carbon. So it's just all these compounds that leach out of litter, out of the soil organic matter pool. It's real complex chemistry. It represents pretty much everything that's out there in nature. So it's really a lot of it going into the water. In fact, it's a big supply for most of the reduced energy in freshwater ecosystems, just this small loss of DOC off the land. But anyway, getting more into just this study, I'll go with the hypothesis that DOC leaching and retention is this important carbon storage mechanism. And to get at this, kind of go through the questions that need to be answered to get to figuring out how big this mechanism is relative to root inputs or soil mixing. So first, kind of go through how much do you, well, let's measure how much DOC is moving into the mineral soil, then ask the question, is this DOC retained or is it just simply decomposed really rapidly by microorganisms leading to really no net retention? And then if we've decided that the DOC is being retained, can we calculate how long this DOC is residing within this retained DOC is actually residing within the mineral soil? And I'll be trying to answer these questions at a forested site, a redwood forest in Mendocino, and kind of typical coastal California prairie ecosystem up in the Marin Headlands. So I apologize, I'm not showing any real pretty site pictures. Just get one soil, you got the forest soil profile back there, and here's the grassland soil profile. So just getting the first question, how much carbon is moving as DOC in these systems? And to get at this, basically just collecting soil water using these various collectors and measuring different soil moisture parameters to be able to calculate how much water is actually flowing through the soils. And we see right away that the forest soil in red, there is significantly more DOC. In fact, about the maximum flux below the organic horizon is about four times the maximum flux at the grassland site. But then at both of these sites, there's this kind of rapid attenuation in the DOC flux of depth. And I think it's actually really important to point out that this attenuation in flux isn't due just to a drop in water flux as you move down through the soil. It's really due to a large drop in the DOC concentration in the soil water. So moving to question two, what's the fate of this DOC? Is it absorption in the mineral soil, or is it simply decomposition of really labile substrates? So carrying out various laboratory studies by myself and going through the literature, people have done similar work, find that absorption is really fast. In fact, in the order of 15 minutes, you could have 50 to 75% or even larger absorption of the amount of DOC in your soil in the solution onto fresh soil surfaces. And it's extensive. I found 50 to 75% of the DOC added to a soil will be retained in kind of the short time frame. And other researchers have found that it's really only partially reversible. The stuff that you add and gets absorbed to the mineral surfaces, you can't just pull back out by leaching deionized water through the system. And this kind of contrasts with results from decomposition studies, where generally it's kind of summed up, say it's slow and only partial. There's really only a small labile pool that's decomposing on any really meaningful time frame, where most of the DOC in like a 1 year incubation experiment is really just sitting around, not doing much. It's really recalcitrant as far as these microorganisms are concerned. So I guess another way to look at this net DOC retention is actually to take our measured fluxes in and out of any given horizon and subtract our estimate of the amount of decay that can occur during the course of water movement through the soil. And we go through this calculation for each horizon, we see, so plotting net DOC retention as a percent of the inputs in each horizon. So we see the surface soils are this big source pool. Then below that, we get kind of progressive increase in the proportion of retention to this maximum in the subsurface, and it drops off. And this kind of subsurface maxima matches up with kind of the soil physical parameters that we'd expect to have the highest net retention, real fine textured soils, lots of clay, lots of iron, aluminum oxides in these subsurface alluvial horizons. So kind of makes sense. The pattern, and it really points to the fact that this DOC probably is really being moved and retained within the soil, especially on this annual basis. So if we believe the DOC is being retained, we could make kind of a simple, quick back-of-the-envelope estimate of what is the percent of total inputs to the mineral soil carbon pool that is due to this DOC movement and retention mechanism. So just this real simple steady-state model, we have our inputs, which are DOC movement, retention, root inputs, and this kind of soil mixing. And at steady state, that should be equal to our net outputs, which are basically our CO2 production. And I've actually measured CO2 production at different depths in the soil, which I won't go into at all today. That's a whole other chapter. And so we could just compare the CO2 production, or the amount of carbon leaving the soil, to these relative inputs. And going through this estimate, we find that the forest soil in the top 40 centimeters, about 9% of the inputs are due to this DOC movement retention mechanism, and greater than 20% below 40 centimeters, whereas at the grassland site, less than 2% of the carbon below, here I'm using 20 centimeters, that's really the main below the main rooting zone at the grassland site. So it's really a very small proportion of the carbon seems to be due to this mechanism. So we can see there's these big differences in the relative input sizes of these mechanisms between these systems with various different carbon allocation. And I'll actually come back to that in another slide or two. And so the third question, now that we know there's some DLC moving into the soil, it's being retained, but we need to know how long it's being retained before we can make an estimate of the stock size due to this movement and retention mechanism. So here, just going to take advantage of the radiocarbon measurements of the dissolved organic carbon that is moving through the soil. And basically, I'm just making the assumption that this DOC is in equilibrium with its kind of exchangeable source pool, which I'm calling here reactive soil pool, RSP. And because of radioactive decay, we can basically set up a simple model and using our DOC fluxes as our input and transport mechanism and solve for the decomposition constant, or the mean residence time, and calculate that the mean residence times of this absorbed DOC is on the order of about 100 years. It's a little bit more in the grassland soil, a little bit less in the forest soil, but these numbers are significantly greater than you look at the average mean residence time of the litter layer. For instance, the redwood site is only 8 years, so this stuff is sticking around for over an order of magnitude longer, so it's really adding to a significant carbon stock. Sorry. And so if we take the DOC flux data and combine it with this mean residence time data, we could actually calculate that at the forest site, 20% of the total carbon stock in the top meter of soil is due to this DOC movement from the surface and retention and slow decomposition below and deeper in the soil. At the grassland site, actually this small input number, 1.7%, actually translates to a much larger percent of the carbon stock because of this long residence time of this absorbed carbon. So it actually becomes, even though it looks like there's not much DOC moving, it's sticking around in the soil once it's absorbed for so long that it actually is contributing to a decent amount of the carbon stock. So just to sum up, I would say that I think our hypothesis is supported, that DOC transport and retention really does contribute a significant portion of the carbon stock. And this is really due to the fact that once this DOC is absorbed, it seems to have a really long residence time within the soil. And it seems like this mechanism is going to vary in importance depending on the amount of rainfall and the timing. So kind of going back to Wendy's work, this seems like actually, I was kind of thinking as she was going through her talk, that this has a lot of implications. If you're putting more, if there's more and more rain and large rain events that can move a lot of DOC down deep in the soil, you actually can be potentially enhancing the carbon stocks down deep in the soil where it can be sticking around for a long amount of time. And I think these calculations, just adding real process-based knowledge to how carbon is stored in the soils and moved through the soils, will really help inform climate change predictions and various strategies that the U.S. and other nations are trying for sequestering carbon within the soils. So I forgot to put my acknowledgement slides, so unfortunately this is the last slide, but I guess NSF, the Kearney Foundation for Soil Science, has been a great funder, and there's been tons of people that have helped me out greatly on this project, so I'll leave it at that.
Soils you have, you're getting what, 80% saturation of the surfaces there. At what point, I mean, it sounds like you have a dynamic equilibrium where they need to decompose carbon, but at some point you're going to saturate that and not be able to use that as a stockpile. Is that right?
Well, yeah, but if you somehow enhance the amount of DOC that's moving down, you're right that there's probably available space to put more carbon down there, but because there is a certain turnover time involved, that you'll reach a new equilibrium over time. So yeah, there'll be a short-term enhancement in the stocks and you'll kind of level off at a new equilibrium rate. And so those numbers weren't the amount of surface area that this stuff is stuck to, that was just how much that's moving into that horizon is staying in that horizon. So it's a slightly different measure.
Any more questions?
Do you have any data on the root input and what the turnover is on that, or any idea sort of like how that would interfere to the DOC input, and why is the DOC so much more reluctant, or why is it hanging around and more reactive? Yeah.
Well, I wish I had good root input data. I do have input data for the grassland site. It's not great, but I do have some estimates at the far side. I do not have any estimates, but I think overall you could say that, and from Wendy Silver's work, roots decompose more or less the same as surface litter. They're just in an environment that's not going to decompose as fast, so there's no reason to suspect that in root inputs, I'd say root inputs are a lot larger than this DOC movement and retention system, but I don't think the dead roots don't persist in the soils for a long amount of time. However, various compounds that can be dissolved from those decaying roots and get moved and absorbed to mineral surfaces can have the potential for staying around.
Yeah. How does the difference you saw between the grassland and forest sales, how would that affect DOC concentrations entering streams in those two systems?
Yeah, I think when you scale from, so I'm just thinking about vertical fluxes where water is primarily moving vertically through your soil. Once you start thinking about water moving out to streams, you're starting to think about saturated areas where you have lateral flow through. You really need flow through shallow surface layers to get the high concentrations of DOC. If everything's really moving vertically through the soil towards like groundwater before it goes out the stream, you're going to have low levels everywhere, I think. So I think it depends a little more on hydrology, the specific hydrology of the system. But I would say, I would expect, if anything, this grasslands generally have, the carbon's more mixed a little deeper because of all this burrowing activity, that you might expect higher concentrations for the same flow path at the grassland site, for the same subsurface flow path, I should say.
Okay, so we're going to have to cut it off there. Thanks a lot.